Chapter 7. Find them again. You can't expect us to amount to anything in heaven, and we don't now. That is the simple fact, and we have got to do the best we can with it. The learned men from other planets and other systems come here, and hang around a while, when they are touring around the kingdom, and then go back to their own section of heaven, and write a book of travels, and they give America about 5 lines in it. And what do they say about us? They say this wilderness is populated with a scattering few hundred thousand billions of red angels, with now and then a curiously complexed diseased one. You see, they think we whites and the occasional nigger are engines that have been bleached out or blackened by some leprous disease or other for some peculiarly rascally sin, mind you. It is a mighty sour pill for us all, my friend, even the modestest of us, let alone the other kind, that think they are going to be received like a long-lost government bond, and hug Abraham into the bargain. I haven't asked you any of the particulars, Captain, but I judge it goes without saying if my experience is worth anything that there wasn't much of a hoorah made over you when you arrived, now was there. Don't mention it, Sandy, says I, coloring up a little. I wouldn't have had the family see it for any amount you are a mind to name. Change the subject, Sandy, change the subject. Well, do you think of settling in the California Department of Bliss? I don't know. I wasn't calculating on doing anything really definite in that direction till the family come. I thought I would just look around, meantime, in a quiet way, and make up my mind. Besides, I know a good many dead people, and I was calculating to hunt them up, and swap a little gossip with them about friends, and old times, and one thing or another, and ask them how they like it here, as far as they have got. I reckon my wife will want to camp in the California range, though, because most all her departed will be there, and she likes to be with folks she knows. Don't you let her. You see what the Jersey District of Heaven is, for whites. Well, the Californian district is 1,000 times worse. It swarms with a mean kind of leather-headed mud-colored angels, and your nearest white neighbor is likely to be 1,000,000 miles away. What a man mostly misses, in heaven, is company of his own sort and color and language. I have come near settling in the European part of heaven once or twice on that account. Well, why didn't you, Sandy? Oh, various reasons. For one thing, although you see plenty of whites there, you can't understand any of them, hardly, and so you go about as hungry for talk as you do here. I like to look at a Russian, or a German or an Italian. I even like to look at a Frenchman, if I ever have the luck, to catch him engaged in anything that ain't indelicate, but looking don't cure the hunger. What you want is talk. Well, there's England, Sandy, the English district of heaven. Yes, but it is not so very much better than this end of the heavenly domain. As long as you run across Englishmen born this side of 300 years ago, you are all right, but the minute you get back of Elizabeth's time the language begins to fog up, and the further back you go the foggier it gets. I had some talk with one landland, and a man by the name of Chaucer, old-time poets, but it was no use, I couldn't quite understand them, and they couldn't quite understand me. I have had letters from them since, but it is such broken English I can't make it out. Back of those men's time the English are just simply foreigners, nothing more, nothing less. They talk Danish, German, Norman French, and sometimes a mixture of all three. Back of them, they talk Latin, and ancient British, Irish, and Gaelic. And then back of these come billions and billions of pure savages that talk a gibberish that Satan himself couldn't understand. The fact is, where you strike one man in the English settlements that you can understand, you wade through awful swarms that talk something you can't make head nor tail of. You see, every country on earth has been overlaid so often, in the course of 1,000,000,000 years, with different kinds of people and different sorts of languages, that this sort of mongrel business was bound to be the result in heaven. Sandy, says I, did you see a good many of the great people history tells about? Yes, plenty. I saw kings and all sorts of distinguished people. Do the kings rank just as they did below? No, a body can't bring his rank up here with him. Divine right is a good enough earthly romance, but it don't go here. Kings drop down to the general level as soon as they reach the realms of grace. I knew Charles II very well. One of the most popular comedians in the English section draws first rate. There are better, of course, people that were never heard of on earth, but Charles is making a very good reputation indeed, and is considered a rising man. Richard the Lionhearted is in the prize dash ring, and coming into considerable favor. Henry VIII is a tragedian, and the scenes where he kills people are done to the very life. Henry VI keeps a religious bookstand. Did you ever see Napoleon, Sandy? Often, sometimes in the Corsican range, sometimes in the French. He always hunts up a conspicuous place, and goes frowning around with his arms folded, and his field glass under his arm, looking as grand, gloomy, and peculiar as his reputation calls for, and very much bothered, because he don't stand as high, here, for a soldier, as he expected to. Why, who stands higher? Oh, a lot of people we never heard of before, the shoemaker, and horse doctor and knife grinder kind, you know, clodhoppers from goodness knows where that never handled a sword, or fired a shot in their lives, but the soldiership was in them, though they never had a chance to show it. But here they take their right place, and Caesar and Napoleon and Alexander have to take a back seat. The greatest military genius our world ever produced was a bricklayer from somewhere back of Boston, died during the Revolution, by the name of Absalom Jones. Wherever he goes, crowds flock to see him. You see, everybody knows that, if he had had a chance he would have shown the world some generalship, that would have made all generalship before look like child's play and prentice work. But he never got a chance. He tried heaps of times to enlist as a private, but he had lost both thumbs, and a couple of front teeth, and the recruiting sergeant wouldn't pass him. However, as I say, everybody knows now what he would have been, and so they flock by the million, to get a glimpse of him, whenever they hear he is going to be anywhere. Caesar, and Hannibal, and Alexander, and Napoleon are all on his staff, and ever so many more great generals. But the public hardly care to look at them when he is around. Boom. There goes another salute. The barkeeper's off quarantine now. Sandy and I put on our things. Then we made a wish, and in a second we were at the reception place. We stood on the edge of the ocean of space, and looked out over the dimness, but couldn't make out anything. Close by us was the grandstand, tier on tier of dim thrones rising up toward the zenith. From each side of it spread away the tiers of seats for the general public. They spread away for leagues and leagues, you couldn't see the ends. They were empty and still, and hadn't a cheerful look, but looked dreary, like a theater, before anybody comes, gas turned down. Sandy says, "Dash, we'll sit down here and wait. We'll see the head of the procession come in sight away off yonder pretty soon now." Says I, "It's pretty lonesome, Sandy. I reckon there's a hitch somewheres. Nobody but just you and me. It ain't much of a display for the barkeeper." "Don't you fret, it's all right. There'll be one more gunfire then you'll see." In a little while we noticed a sort of a lightish flush, away off on the horizon. "Head of the torchlight procession," says Sandy. It spread, and got lighter and brighter. Soon it had a strong glare like a locomotive headlight. It kept on getting brighter and brighter till it was like the sun peeping above the horizon line at sea. The big red rays shot high up into the sky. "Keep your eyes on the grandstand, and the miles of seats sharp," says Sandy, "and listen for the gunfire." Just then it burst out, boom, 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 like a million thunderstorms in one, and made the whole heavens rock. Then there was a sudden and awful glare of light all about us, and in that very instant every one of the millions of seats was occupied, and as far as you could see, in both directions, was just a solid pack of people, and the place was all splendidly lit up. It was enough to take a body's breath away. Sandy says, that is the way we do it here. No time fooled away, nobody straggling in after the curtain's up. Wishing is quicker work than traveling. A quarter of a second ago these folks were millions of miles from here. When they heard the last signal, all they had to do was to wish, and here they are. The prodigious choir struck up. We long to hear thy voice, to see thee face to face. It was noble music, but the uneducated chipped in and spoilt it, just as the congregations used to do on earth. The head of the procession began to pass now, and it was a wonderful sight. It swept along, thick and solid, 500,000 angels abreast, and every angel carrying a torch, and singing the whirring thunder of the wings, made a body's headache. You could follow the line of the procession back, and slanting upward into the sky, far away in a glittering snaky rope, till it was only a faint streak in the distance. The rush went on and on, for a long time, and at last, sure enough, along comes the barkeeper, and then everybody rose, and a cheer went up that made the heavens shake, I tell you. He was all smiles, and had his halo tilted over one ear in a cocky way, and was the most satisfied dash-looking saint I ever saw. While he marched up the steps of the grandstand, the choir struck up. The whole wide heaven groans, and waits to hear that voice. There were four gorgeous tents standing side by side in the place of honor, on a broad railed platform in the center of the grandstand, with a shining guard of honor round about them. The tents had been shut up all this time. As the barkeeper climbed along up, bowing and smiling to everybody, and at last, got to the platform, these tents were jerked up aloft all of a sudden, and we saw four noble thrones of gold, all caked with jewels, and in the two middle ones sat old white-whiskered men, and in the two others a couple of the most glorious and gaudy giants, with platter halos and beautiful armor. All the millions went down on their knees, and stared, and looked glad, and burst out into a joyful kind of murmurs. They said, two archangels. That is splendid. Who can the others be? The archangels gave the barkeeper a stiff little military bow. The two old men rose. One of them said, Moses and Esau welcome thee, and then all the four vanished, and the thrones were empty. The barkeeper looked a little disappointed, for he was calculating to hug those old people, I judge, but it was the gladdest and proudest multitude you ever saw because they had seen Moses and Esau. Everybody was saying, did you see them? I did, Esau's side face was to me, but I saw Moses full in the face, just as plain as I see you this minute. The procession took up the barkeeper, and moved on with him again, and the crowd broke up and scattered. As we went along home, Sandy said it was a great success, and the barkeeper would have a right to be proud of it forever. And he said we were in luck too, said we might attend receptions for 40,000 years to come, and not have a chance to see a brace of such grand moguls as Moses and Esau. We found afterwards that we had come near seeing another patriarch, and likewise a genuine prophet besides, but at the last moment they sent regrets. Sandy said there would be a monument put up there, where Moses and Esau had stood, with the date and circumstances, and all about the whole business, and travelers would come for thousands of years and gawk at it, and climb over it, and scribble their names on it. Footnotes. 1. The captain could not remember what this word was. He said it was in a foreign tongue. End of the Project Gutenberg ebook, Captain Stormfield's Visit to Heaven. This file should be named CPTSF-10. TTXT or CPTSF-10. Zip corrected editions of our ebooks, get a new number, CPTSF-11. TTXT versions based on separate sources get new letter. CPTSF10A TTXT Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as public domain in the U.S., unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we usually do not keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. We are now trying to release all our ebooks 1 year in advance of the official release dates, leaving time for better editing. Please be encouraged to tell us about any error or corrections, even years after the official publication date. Please note neither this listing nor its contents are final till midnight of the last day of the month of any such announcement. The official release date of all Project Gutenberg ebooks is at midnight, Central Time, of the last day of the stated month. A preliminary version may often be posted for suggestion, comment and editing by those who wish to do so. Most people started our websites at http Gutenberg Netter http promo Net page. These websites include award-winning information about Project Gutenberg, including how to donate, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter free. Those of you who want to download any ebook before announcement can get to them as follows, and just download by date. This is also a good way to get them instantly upon announcement, as the indexes our catalogers produce obviously take a while after an announcement goes out in the Project Gutenberg newsletter. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.